to channel one over on the Rio, Lois Dixon two, Lois Dixon and the McIntosh Baptist Church two. This is channel one over. This is channel one over, and this is the beginning of the tape on Saturday, late Saturday afternoon. And this is a tape, the 21st of June, 69. And this is a tape I'd been waiting for. This is a tape I'd been waiting for. Now, this is a tape on Saturday afternoon late after Lois had talked that day. And she's getting ready to go on that that trip with her sister up to Nova Scotia. On Channel 1 right, Channel 1 over. This is Channel 1 over, beginning of Channel 1 over.
You remind me of my uncle in his checkers.
Tell me about
Chinese checkers. I told you about him in his Chinese checkers.
That's Uncle John.
Uncle John. Uncle John was just as bad. Uncle John was the last one.
He'd turn it around and say, let's have a game of checkers.
Yeah, now we'll play some checkers. And we haven't been playing for 2 hours. Look, I don't know how cute as they can be, but I don't. Let me see, it's hot everywhere you go in this house now. Oh, we can't sit here, I brought all these things in out of the weather last night.
You know, this is all. You said Uncle George moved somewhere, and they were glad to have him there because he was a bachelor and other things.
Mm-hmm. After the Tremier place was sold, according to the will of my Uncle Billy Tremier.
Mm-hmm.
That was still home to Uncle George up in there, and the place didn't bring what they thought about. It was worse because there wasn't anybody bid. They thought that if Uncle George wasn't there bidding himself, he'd have somebody else bidding.
Yeah. Oh yes. Sure.
And so it just didn't bring on a sale like that what the place was worth.
Mm-hmm.
But Uncle George didn't want. Uncle Billy thought he wouldn't want a big laying room house and him unmarried. And I asked, and they could begin to foresee that the government's going to tell you how much cotton you could plant and how much you're going to have to plow up.
Oh, yeah.
So he thought he'd be glad to be relieved of the responsibility of it. So I don't know what he gave, how much he gave my Uncle George, but he fixed it so he wouldn't be worried for the rest of his life, but he was going to be relieved of the management of that farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Uncle George turned around and he bought all the cute little rock house. Oh, several miles from there, but kind of in the same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It had about 10, 11 acres. And he had, and some of those who lived around about had been in the habit of farming that land anyway, or renting that little acreage. So he didn't have any responsibility just to live there.
Oh.
And they thought he was so much fun.
Yes.
And the women would cook, every time they cooked their beans or their cornbread or whatnot, all their pies and cakes, their apple pies, and make their apricot jelly and stuff. Why, they just kept his pantry and his kitchen and icebox full of homemade things.
Well, Lord, that sounds like a storybook.
Uh-huh. And he had a radio that was before the days of, I guess just before the days of TV. I don't know anybody had TV in those days.
Uh-huh.
But he had a radio, and he'd play those checkers with the men. They'd leave their plows when the roll kinkles up to the house. He would sit in the shade and play Chinese checkers with him.
Well, that is that...
And he was good to them, too. They were good to him, and he was good to them, too.
Uh-huh.
Financially, they knew that, and if they had to go to get a doctor somewhere in a hurry, some medicine, why, he was never busy. His car was always there.
Mm-hmm.
So he did quite a lot for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they had good times together.
Well, now.
And I tell you this, then when he died, they were great in that part of the country to have auction sales. So he had in his will, too, that his place would be sold at auction when he died.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1950 or 1951.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to sell at auction. Well, the last year of his life, one of those people who lived nearby who owned a little farm adjoining his and had done so much for him, they needed a lot of repair work on their place. They had a tenant, too, but they kept up that tenant house better than they kept up their own. And so Uncle George felt sorry for him. He thought they ought to have a little better place. And so he said, why don't you move in with me and then repair this while you're repairing that in your own homestead. So anyway, they moved in there. They took care of him. And that was during the summertime, because all we down here, they wanted to die down here about the first, second day of March. He died down here that time of year. But he'd go back up in there, and they would look after him for about 2 summers, I guess, they lived there. But they didn't want to buy that place because it adjoined their property, you know. Mm-hmm. And I knew Uncle George would like for them to have it rather than they would have it with anybody, but was going to sell it at auction. Well, I couldn't be up there the day of the sale. So I called Uncle George's lawyer, and I said, we can't any of us be there, but we want the Knights to get it. And you tip that auctioneer off. All we wanted to do is to bring the appraised price. We know they can't afford to, no need to run it on up more than that, but we do want to bring the appraised price. And when it brings that, we want you to see that it's knocked off on the Knights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
nice. People are a little, what you call that, crooked business or not, but a lot of people do it, don't they?
Have to get their heads together. I took a like to him after I found out it was his black Stetson hat that fell down off that. Now, he tried to make it up with you.
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't replace those things. He didn't have any teeth, uh-huh, any judgment for those, uh-huh, things, did he?
Mm-hmm. But they were my nice men. Hold on. They were tall, they were nice looking. And it was a funny thing. I didn't think they looked alike, but some people thought they looked like brothers, they looked alike. See, Uncle George died first. He was youngest, mm-hmm, but he died first.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew that we went back to George and buried Uncle George. But Uncle John came home with me. Mm-hmm. And people, we were a frequent sight on these highways around here. Mm-hmm. And so they said, I thought Lord's buried her uncle. They thought the two men looked enough alike. Well, here we came on back, and he wore the same kind of Stetson hat. He was a little taller, a little bigger man than Uncle George. And some people just assumed that was Lois and her uncle, you know. They said, well, I thought you buried her uncle.
Yeah.
The uncle died over here at Dr. Finger Hospital.
They knew you, didn't they?
So I'm the girl with the uncle.
Yeah.
A multiplicity of uncles. But they were so much fun and good company, and they were sick a lot, but they weren't still.
You know, that would spoil a person to have people in the family like that. Yes, sir. And you're a person, you could put up with a lot of things outside, you wouldn't pay much attention to them, too.
Well, I think about my mother, how well she was looked after, and my Aunt Mimi, how well she was looked after by Uncle George after she lost her husband, Mr. Trimmer, who was so
mm-hmm.
much older than she, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then these two uncles, how much I did for them. I got quite had to give one or the other of them my room.
Mm-hmm.
Twice a year, I'd move up and down stairs.
Mm-hmm.
The one that was less able to go upstairs, the one that had to have this room down here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made quite a lot of sacrifice, lost a whole lot of sleep, given medicine every 2 hours when they had these sulfur drugs people used to give. And I thought, well, here are these two men, they never raised a child. They never bought a child a pair of shoes or a sweater or a coat or medicine. They didn't have any children, though, you see.
Neither one of them?
No. No, Uncle George never married. He was a pastor.
Yeah.
Uncle John never had any children.
Oh, he didn't.
But I thought how well cared for. They're not in a nursing home.
Yeah.
Around somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think about me now. Who's
going
to look after me?
Yeah.
I probably end up in a nursing home.
We all better pick out a good one, haven't we?
Uh-huh.
But
my mother said to me, along the latter part of her illnesses, I know she was at the table in the kitchen. I came in, I parked the car. We used to park out here on the street.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one who opened up that gate and made that driveway in there. I don't think she would have liked it. But I thought, well, I'm running this house now after time. It's more convenient for me to drive inside.
Oh, and get off that street.
Uh-huh. And get close to the house in weather or in bringing in baskets of clothes, because we still have a washwoman. We have to bring clothes in and out. And I hope she's immortal.
You know, yeah.
But why they we have washed rents, but then they don't are.
You know, one reason, Lois, you have such a good disposition is that your mother had a, I can just see it, she had a firm hand, and you just depended on her to do the thinking when she was living.
Yeah, I think it is.
I may be wrong. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't know. She was my mother.
Yeah.
Now, you know, my father was my father, but I was a little closer to him. I can't explain it, but we were more like friends, too.
Oh.
But my mother was always my mother.
Yeah.
There was a comradeship, definitely a sweet daughter and mother relationship.
Yeah.
But I can't describe it. It was different between my father and me.
Yeah. Even after you got grown and all that, there was still, yeah. Why don't you think that helped your disposition?
Well, I know. My father was a very quiet man, a very quiet man, very highly respected around here for his business integrity and his honesty and all this kind of thing. But he was not antisocial at all, but he was just quiet. Then he married my mother, who was 5 years younger than she, and after 3 years of married life, why I came along, I was the first child. And unusual, I think, in a way, but he wanted a girl.
Yeah.
Most men want a boy.
Yeah.
But I was a girl. And I don't know, he was just proud. He wanted a girl, he got a girl. And I don't know whether that had anything to do with the closeness of our dispositions or not.
Looks to me like you've just been spoiled all your life. Now, you see that you had those uncles, and then Uncle Billy. Now
he liked all the nieces and nieces, of course. But my aunt Mimi used to tell me that he was especially fond of me. Well, I used to be there more than the elders because I lived in Florida. The elders lived up around in there. It was not much for them to go over there, but they used to send me up there for summer because I was delicate.
Yeah. That's even when you're just a child.
As a child, I was delicate. Oh, as an adult, I've been strong. I've had good health.
Mm-hmm.
Good health. But as a child, I was delicate. I had pneumonia. I had typhoid fever 2 or 3 times. Oh, and I've heard them tell about I was sick in this bed, and they were building this new. They made an addition to this porch, too. Not only this one, but the back porch was changed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing that. They did that first. And they were doing that while I was lying so ill. And they had a nurse here, and they're all sitting up all night. And my mother, I've heard her tell how she and my father sat on this brick out there all night, the brick that was laid there about making the pillars of the scene, and prayed. Because they didn't know I lived through the night.
Yes.
And so there's been a lot of times like that in my early life that I guess made them.
Yes.
And they made me a little closer to some of them.
Yeah. And they couldn't turn it over to the hospital and the doctors and the sulfur drugs then.
Oh, no.
They had a close.
Now, there were 5 doctors around here at the time. There were 2 or 3 here in town. And this Dr. Montgomery and his son, Dr. Montgomery, in Micanopy, they're supposed to be a very fine doctor. The young doctor was primary alcoholic, but he was a good doctor, even so. But the old man, old Dr. Montgomery, you know about that? You never hear about the Montgomerys in Micanopy? Well, you go down one of the streets of Micanopy west to the cemetery. Have you ever been there?
Yes.
Well, you know, on the left, there is a big
crummy that way now.
Uh-huh. But there's a big old brick wall there and archway, but back there that was a beautiful landscape yard. And those trees had come up in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
My mother used to go there and spend the day with Mrs. Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
And back way back in there was a very, very fine house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Dr. and Mrs. Montgomery lived. They had one son, his name was Lucius. Dr. Lucius Montgomery.
It's all new to me.
And they sent him away to school and in a class of several hundred. He graduated, I think, with 3rd honors, I think. Very brilliant.
Yeah.
But also along the line, up there in the social life of the college at that time,
mm-hmm.
he learned to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back here and he just ruined his life and career with drinking. And about that time, people began to have cars. because the roads were sand beds, just ruts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Roads came a little later. And he'd get out in his car and he'd drive like a madman, and people would phone from one place to the other, stay on the highway.
Wow.
Dr. Montgomery just left town. Lucius Montgomery just left town. Be careful. Well, anyway, the two Montgomerys were waiting on me, and Dr. Walker, and Dr. Means, and Dr. Bergen.
You were just a child. Dr. Walker died in 1906.
Yes, but Dr. Walker, yes, I was a little thing.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Walker was a one-armed man.
Yes.
One-armed doctor. Well, he attended
in the war.
He attended my mother at my birth. Well, it was just before that, I guess. Maybe 1934. I was born in 1897.
Mm-hmm.
And we had moved up here. I was born down there, into the street.
Mm-hmm.
But in early, 1902, I guess, while we moved up here. So I was sick, I know, in that room. I can remember that.
So you had your daddy and your mama had all the doctors taken care of.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Goodness.
And a nurse. That was something in those days to have a nurse.
Yeah.
In town. I don't know where they got her, but there was a nurse. Her name was Mrs. Pelot. P-E-L-O-T, Pelot.
Yeah. You know, one of the nicest little stories I ever heard was that about the five nieces inheriting.
Mm-hmm.
Lois, give me this something about. Mm-hmm. Who were the other two, three?
Well, my sister and I.
Yes, Lucille.
And then the oldest brother was a doctor. We all call him Uncle Doc. Uncle Doc Willingham.
Now that's your mother's brother,
mm-hmm.
Willingham.
The oldest brother. And he was a doctor, and he was very brilliant, a very brilliant man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very fine speaker. He didn't have time to practice his medicine up there, but everybody wanted to speak, dedicate this, speak here, speak there, because he
didn't come down here.
He was never here.
Is your mother married down here, and she's the only one?
No, mother married in Georgia, and then moved down here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But she's the only one that came down here, of your mother's family.
Yes. And so Uncle Doc had two girls and a boy.
What is Uncle John's name?
Willingham, they were all Willingham.
Well,
they were all Willingham.
Yes.
Uncle John Willingham,
yeah,
Uncle George,
yeah,
Willingham, Uncle,
yeah,
Doc. His name was Monroe.
Yeah.
And the brother and sister called him Mon.
Mm-hmm.
Abbreviation Monroe, but we always called Uncle Doc.
Mm-hmm.
And he had two girls and a boy. And those two girls are now living in South Carolina. And one of them is badly. She's
Are they
I'm
the
right
ones
between,
you want to play the tape
They're the
from?
Ones I'm going to see. I go to see every
mm-hmm.
every summer. The youngest one, who's about 2 months younger than I, is just all doubled up with crippling arthritis.
Arthritis will get you on, yeah.
And the other girl, who was about 2 years older, had a stroke 2 or 3 years ago, and she's overcoming it. She can walk and get around.
Now, are they all Uncle Mons?
Mm-hmm.
Three daughters.
No, they just had the two.
Two.
And a son.
Yes.
The two girls live in South Carolina now. I go to see them every time. All right, and then the other, there was another brother named Ben, Uncle Ben Willingham.
Oh.
And he and his wife had one child, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the five, Catherine Willingham, and Ora,
Uncle
and
Munch
Dale
too.
Willingham, and Lois,
yeah,
and Lucille Dixon. We were the five.
Well, now, did they visit up there with?
Yes,
Uncle
but they all lived up in that neighborhood, and they would go in the summer and stay a little while. But I'd go and stay all summer because they thought people couldn't live and be healthy in Florida in the summer. You'd have malaria.
Yes. Well, there's some truth in it, wasn't there?
Yes, there's some truth in it.
Yeah.
But they put me on the train here, and I'd get off of the train in Calhoun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd spend the summer, I'd take a trunk. My father used to rope the trunk.
Yes.
And then the niggers would come from the farm out there in a wagon, take the trunk back, and then they'd come in the carriage and get me.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of company in the summertime. Mm-hmm. All those people who used to live around there would migrate to Atlanta. You know, that was a drawing card for younger people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd want to come back to the country and visit in summertime. And then so many of them would come to my aunt's. And Uncle George used to say, I like comers and goers.
Yes.
But they'd come and stay.
And the five nieces mm-hmm. inherited.
Mm-hmm.
He willed it to his wife.
Well, to his, it was hers, her life, everything was hers, her lifetime,
yes.
And then at her death,
yes.
it would be sold at auction and given the price of the sale given to
yes.
these five nieces.
And that was around 1930. But the will had been made long before that.
Oh, long before that.
When you all were just growing up.
My uncle died.
Now, you all must have been a bunch of butterflies, a gay crowd, Lois.
Well, they liked to have us come, and they had croquet out in the yard, and they had there's a creek back there where we could go and wading, and
yes.
and a lot of springs.
Yes.
And I made a love to fix a great big lunch and help pick up the surrey, the carriage of the surrey, and we'd go and spend the day. And then after, Uncle Billy was in frail health for several years, so he died, and there wasn't much going.
Oh.
But mostly staying. But then after he died, Aunt Mabel was still feeling well, and she loved to go. She loved to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
And now my Uncle George is more settled. He was much younger. She was the oldest in the family. He was the youngest.
Yes.
And
oh.
I remember she used to say, now, Budo, she called him Budo. Budo, I'm older than you. I was born before you, but you're the oldest man. Now, you go hitch up that Thursday, and we're going to pack a lunch, and we're going to up to Cahada Springs and spend the day.
Yes.
And he'd rather just sit around there and feed on the bounces and read the paper or a doe or something. But she said, I was born before you were, but you're the oldest man.
That's right. That's right. The porch got banisters, but nobody puts a feet
up
on
there,
now.
Up there it had banisters, you know, too.
Yes.
They had a lot of porches.
Yes. Well, now that you've got banisters there, but nobody puts his feet on them,
no.
Lois. Well, I wouldn't think of going out there and putting my feet on them.
My father used to sit there with his feet propped up.
I used to.
Uh-huh.
Well, now you see, I'm house broke.
Yeah.
Isn't that awful? Well, all the time when you were growing up, you just had everything. You didn't have any money. I mean, you weren't rich or anything like that, but you had everything.
Mm-hmm.
You just had everything.
Well, I said we've always had everything we wanted because it was so simple.
Yes. Yes. And those colored fellas, Hogan?
Hogan, mm-hmm.
They were bright?
Yes.
They knew how to do things?
Mm-hmm. And they were fine looking. They had fine disease. They looked like they might have been Yale oarsmen, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fine disease. Tall and straight and broad.
Mm-hmm.
Good teeth. Fine looking men.
Well, how in the world did they ever get to act like that? Just unusual?
Well, I guess so.
Just
now, the women in the family were very nice looking, too. But all the men, there were three families of them. They had three tenor houses, and they were all Hogans.
Oh, in Uncle Billy's place.
Mm-hmm.
Three tenant houses,
mm-hmm.
all Hogans.
Mm-hmm.
Did they farm?
They farmed. Yes, yeah, they worked their land. They
mm-hmm.
worked the trimming of all.
Mm-hmm. They did the work. What did he do?
Well, he just bought some. And then he got away, he couldn't go out to the fields, and then that's when he said to Uncle George to come, and his home was broken up.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you come here and manage this farm,
mm-hmm.
and I'll see that you
don't
have any need to regret it.
Yeah, no need to regret it.
Now, Uncle George put on a straw hat, and he'd go out there and kind of walk up and down all day and see that everything went just right. But now, but my Uncle John was a farmer too. He had a farm. But when he went out to the farm, he had his Stetson hat, he had on kid clothes. He looked like the governor. You never did see him with a field hat on, or overalls, or farm clothes. Never.
What do you know?
A collar, white collar. And if he would go out, they have a fireplace, if he would go out and bring in a stick of wood, the men tenants on his place supposed to do that, and they did, but occasionally, if there came occasion when he had to bring in a stick of wood, he put on gloves and go out and bring in that wood.
Well, where'd you learn to work?
Hmm? Where to who?
You.
Well, we always did our housework. We used to have a servant house in the yard that's built same down this house was. And we always had a couple out there. But even so, we did a lot of work around the house.
Just a little housework?
Mm-hmm.
Well?
But Uncle John was to the Purple Barn.
Uh-huh. Well, that's nice. That's nice. But he was still a good businessman.
Oh, yes. He's a good businessman. It was shrewd.
Well, what did he have to be shrewd about? He didn't trade or sell anything.
But he owned a lot of houses. He was a farmer, but he owned a lot of houses in town.
Up there?
In Ackworth.
How far away was that?
Well, that would be 50-60 miles from Calhoun, from Uncle George.
Yeah, yeah.
Uncle George's place.
Yeah.
But his farm was down there. As a young man, Uncle John went to South Carolina,
yeah,
Spartanburg, and he had a grocery store.
Oh.
And he ran it in a very fashionable way. It was the cleanest. It was the cleanest, the neatest, the finest looking grocery store you ever saw.
What do you know about it?
I used to visit there as a child.
You visited South Carolina too?
Yes, Never stay long, not as often as I did in Georgia, but I had been there. He married a Spartanburg girl.
Uh-huh.
He married May Rogers. It was Uncle John and Aunt May.
Uh-huh.
And he had the fashionable trade, grocery trade in Spartanburg.
Yeah. But he didn't do any of the work.
No, not at all. He sat in the back there with his white collar on and everything.
Uh-huh.
And he told the men what to do. And he was one of the first who would do this. They were selling nuts around there, but he knew his trade didn't want to pick out nuts. And they could keep their maids busy enough doing other things than picking out nuts. So he had these men, these boys who worked in his store, delivery boys or whatnot working in his store, but they weren't doing anything else. They weren't sitting around doing nothing. They were picking out nuts. And he'd sell those nut meats. But now the first time I ever heard of buying nut meats was in his store in Spartanburg.
Yeah. So he was shrewd.
Uh-huh. And he got tired of that. He liked that he was brought up on the farm. I guess he had some farm blood in him. So after he made had accumulated quite a good little capital, I guess, over there.
Well,
he sold the store and came back to Georgia and bought the farm.
Oh, he'd had enough of business life.
Uh-huh. And then began to buy houses. He would rent low, cheap houses at rent, for low rent.
Yeah. But it's all cash. And
it's all cash. It's always full.
It didn't have much in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he could do that.
Uh-huh. He said there was money, that kind of renting.
Yeah.
Rather than a big house.
Big house. Yeah.
And he had a lot of houses in Ackworth. But he began to sell them all after his wife died. He began to sell them. He even sold his own place. He said to us girls, he said, I'm going to sell this place because I said I can sell it better than you could.
Oh, yes. Yes. Now, he didn't have any children.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine lived nearer him than the other girls. But this time, the other girls had married. They lived in Greenville, South Carolina. Catherine was the only one who lived up there. And I was down here. And when Aunt May died, she had a stroke, a complete stroke. She could never see, she could neither see, nor hear, nor speak, nor move, nor anything.
And never recovered.
And she lay in that hospital 110 days. And he had nurses with her around the clock. And as they'd been there a while, the doctors came to him and said, "Miss Willingham, we can't do a thing any well for your wife. You might just as well take her home." And he said, "Boy, think I can." He said, "If I had her at home, my first thought would be to get her to the hospital." He said, "We're here, we're going to stay." And the doctor said, "Well, that's all right, but the expense is terrific, and we just thought we'd tell you if you could manage it at home some other way." But he said, "I don't have, well, I can manage it at home. So here we're here, and we're going to stay, and you let me worry about the bills." And you know, it must have been terrific. But I never heard him say one thing in the world about how much it cost.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything about the exorbitant bills, but it must have been terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And when she passed, my Uncle George was down here with me while we went up to the funeral, and he just sort of, she was a beautiful woman, and of course she'd been sick for a good while, and her dresses were not new, so he bought a beautiful dress, and she was just lovely. And I remember I wrote him later, and what a beautiful way he put away. I said, "Aunt May, always beautiful in life. It was just as beautiful in death."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I found that letter in one of his pockets.
Oh.
After he liked it and he kept it.
Yeah,
yeah, after he was gone, I found that letter in one of his pockets.
Is that right? Well, you knew him a long time, Lois.
Mm-hmm.
Till 1959.
And he wanted to come down here now. Catherine then is the one who did more for him right at first. She lived near her. When I went there to the funeral, I said, "Uncle John, come go home with us, with Uncle George and me." Well, he said he just couldn't go then.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, "I will come." So Catherine kind of sponsored him up there.
Mm-hmm.
And in time, though, he came down here. Then in the summertime, he'd go back to Catherine's. Because
mm-hmm.
He sold this place. This Allatoona Dam was being built up there.
Oh.
And part of his land was involved. And I think they now have a big sporting area around there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when he said, "I'm going to sell it. Because I think I can sell it better than you can."
Mm-hmm.
And says that they're going to take it anyway pretty soon.
When did May die?
His wife?
Uh-huh. She died before your mother did.
Uh-huh. No, no.
Well, she died after your mother did. Uh-huh. That's all I meant, yeah.
And so he would go back to Catherine's and stay in the summer and then come back down here. And then, lo and behold, Catherine was the youngest one of us, if they didn't find her dead in the bedroom now. She'd been having a heart condition, but we never dreamed about it being that serious.
Mm-hmm.
And one Saturday morning, her husband went to play golf. That was customary. Saturday morning, he would go over to Canton, to Bob Jones's golf course over there. Bob Jones originated around in Canton and Ball Ground. So there's a big golf course named for him over there. So Doc, her husband would call him Doc. He went to play golf. And he frequently didn't disturb Kathy. He'd get a cup of coffee and go on to the golf course. And the son then later got up that morning. They had just one son. And it seems that was frequently the way on Saturday morning. Everybody just kind of got their own breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And but she was usually up about helping Melvin, the son, with his breakfast. And I've forgotten just how it was. But anyway, Melvin thought it was strange that his mother wasn't stirring in it. He called. He said, "What's the matter then, Mom? You think it's your birthday or something?" And no answer and no move. He called from the door of the room. And he went in he became the suspicious. She was dead.
Hmm. How old was she?
She was about 45.
Yeah.
So that broke up Uncle John's place of staying. So we went back. They called us, of course, and we went to the funeral. He and I drove up there to the funeral. And we stayed 7 days. We talked things over with her husband. And I said to Uncle John, I said, well, now I just say what we do. I'll put an air conditioning. I'll get one or two air conditioning units and put it in my house down there. And you can just live here year round. It's just as comfortable there as it is anywhere else. But the girls over in South Carolina said, no, you come up and spend the summers with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided they'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I take him up in this after school, but I take him to Greenville. And then that one of those cousins' husbands up there would bring him, drive back with him when he come in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then came one Christmas. He didn't come last Christmas, ever. Uncle George always came in November. But Uncle John had a little more business than he did. He felt he should be there around the first of the year to get his business straightened out for the year just the way he wanted it. So he never did come after January the 1st. And along December sometime, he'd take sick, right bad sick. In fact, they phoned me one night, and I got on the plane and went up there, stayed there too, and came on back. And then I went up at Christmas time. And in that meantime, the doctor had said up there, he said, he's not able to go to Florida. And so I went up and... But I had the understanding. I knew the girls had all told me, said, he's not going to be able to go back with you, the doctor said so. So I went up, and he wanted to go so bad. He said, you've come for me, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I came on back without him, and he died in March.
Up there.
Mm-hmm.
59. Oh, me. All those good things break up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Hogan boys were the pallbearers
mm-hmm.
at Uncle Billy's funeral.
Mm-hmm. And the aunt's funeral, third boy, they were still there. They're my Aunt Mamie's funeral, they still served as pallbearers. But after that, then the place was sold.
Mm-hmm.
And, They thought that it was about time for them to do something else. And other people all around about there thought there might be, Hogan's might be wanting to move, the new tenants, the new owners might have somebody else they want to put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other landowners would be glad to get those Hogan neighbors to move to their place.
Mm-hmm.
So after it was sold by, at auction, out of the end I've ever seen there, they began to move to other farms.
Mm-hmm.
And the old ones soon began to die, so.
That's remarkable. Lois, honey.
Mrs. Crosby Adams, the influence that she had was just widespread.
Mm-hmm.
And when you all were up there, and how did she talk to you? That summer, in the summer, when you all went up there to study with her.
Well, there's scrapbooks to most of what she talked about.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about her material, and she'd sit at the piano and she'd demonstrate how some people might play this and how she'd be played this way.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of the young teachers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't had much experience. Everything she said was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Everything she said was helpful to us.
Yeah.
And then one thing would lead on to another, would suggest something else to her, and then she'd begin to tell about some interesting experiences she'd had with these other musicians in various fields of music.
And you all love to hear talk about the big people.
Mm-hmm. And then she had two of her pupils to come in sometimes and be like guinea pigs, show us how they responded to her
uh-huh.
to her method of teaching.
But now it wasn't just pure music. It was it had a sort of an orientation and a kind
mm-hmm.
of how would you say it, directed towards...
Toward the piano, toward teaching the piano.
Well, I was thinking about what you said, the musical study exalts life.
Yes, uh-huh.
Now, how did she kind of do those things?
Well, her idea was that music center should be broadening, and we should correlate it with a lot of other subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And every area of life would be more or less exalted,
mm-hmm.
because music is a big language,
mm-hmm.
and it touches so many facets. All right, she said, she used to say to us, tell your people and do research. When they're selling a piece, get the geographical background, get the historical background, get the kind of artistic background of it.
Oh.
Not just merely how to play those particular notes, but learn about the composer, about the area of in which it was written, and all the influences that might come to the bear.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have my pupils do that now. We have it's many little song books, little study books. They'll have just that little phrase of the Volgovo song,
mm-hmm.
just about 8 bars of it. But then we talk about rivers.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's the biggest river in the United States? What's the biggest river in South America, you know? What's the biggest river in the state of Florida?
Mm-hmm.
I got them all talking about rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And then about the slaves pulling those barges down the river.
Mm-hmm.
So we have quite a study before we ever begin to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, if it's about birds or whatever it's about, whatever the piece is about,
mm-hmm.
we try to get its background about its composer and about its country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's so nice to teach. And sometimes I have the children get up. I say, now we'll just make out like we're pulling that barge.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out if they would sing. And all pull on the same word, all the same rhythm, the same accent, it made the work a lot easier, a
mm-hmm.
lot lighter. Yo, yo, heave, ho.
Oh, yes.
Yo, yo, heave. I said they pull
yeah.
on the word heave.
Yeah.
Then they take the steps.
Yeah.
Yeah, this makes it interesting, too. Interesting to me and to them, too.
Brilliant life, isn't it? Now, that's the end of this remarkable visit with Lois Dixon, Saturday afternoon, late. After she'd taught all day, had her pupils, and we sat right in the little hall, right where, without any ceremony, and picked up to talk about Uncle George. And this is Channel 1 over on the new reel, Channel 1 over around 5:30, Channel 1 over around 5:30, Saturday afternoon, the 21st of June, 69. Now, this is another visit where Lois Dixon, Sunday the 22nd of June, 69. Sunday the 22nd of June, 69. Now, the occasion for this is right tricky. I called her right after church and asked her if she wanted to hear that tape we made last night, that it was first rate, just marvelous. Before she went on her visit, she said yes. And I took my machine, my record player, the tape recorder, and I was going to ask her to fill in on 2 or 3 subjects on that poor tape. Good subjects. And of course what happened was we just talk. It was a long, fine talk. And on 1 or 2 of the subjects she just did them so much better than she'd done before. But in general it's not quite as interesting tape. No, it's not near as interesting tape as the one last night. That was one of the outstanding ones. So this is Channel 1 over, 5:50. Channel 1 over, 5:50. When I went in, she wanted to tell me something about Uncle John, and she didn't think about taping it. Well, I said, let's tape it. If we don't want to keep it, we don't have to.
Riding along in the car or anywhere, like he could say, the funniest thing, the most unexpected thing, just keep you in stitches all the time.
Yeah.
But his stories as such are most about the Negroes who were going to play.
Oh, really?
You know, they always have a lot of fun. And I don't remember all. I remember this one called Out of It, developed Old Family Sing. Or show families have Old Family Sings.
Let me see.
Well, Uncle John can tell this story. Do it fairly well. I can't tell it like that, but I can get to the point.
Yes.
I can get to the point. Well, it's about an old Negro who was plowing a mule up on the hillside. Have you seen those hills? Wonder how in the world the man in the plow stood up and the mule to plow around there. Well, Uncle John has such a hill on some of his property, and was rocky and rough, and about the hardest work on the farm was that job. But this old nigger was very conscientious, and revered the truth. He wanted to tell the truth about everything. But he had a bad experience with that mule one time out there while he was plowing. And the mule got stubborn, and he couldn't get anything out of it. And then the nigger man got mad between the two of them. Well, they had a time up on the hillside. Finally, the mule took over and began going around that hillside just as fast as he could go, and pulling this old colored man behind him just like he was nothing but a child or a little chip of wood or something. And finally got to the end of the hill, and the man was pretty well scarred up, and the plow was all broken, and everything was a mess. And the old nigger got up, and he looked at that mule, and he said, "You're the meanest god darnest mule I ever seen. Pretty nigh." Yeah. And that pretty nigh is what has come down to us through all these years.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I can't just hop down myself. Pretty nigh. Don't help out pretty nigh. And you'd add to it every time, and enlarge upon it, and make it a whole lot worse than it was. But till the time got to the end of it, he just had us all on the floor, nearly.
Uh-huh.
So a man said, "That's the meanest god darnest you I ever seen."
Yeah.
Pretty nigh. He wanted to be honest, maybe one, but he's pretty nigh, didn't he?
Yeah. What's some more he used to tell?
Well, you see, I can't think of any more now. He used to especially enjoy that one, but he had lots of others about the...
If you just thought about it, I bet you it all come back, you know.
Well, maybe a lot of those. Now, this white man, Jake, who cultivated the land around this new little house where he lived.
The rock house?
Uh-huh. Jake rather talked in the plow.
Uh-huh.
And so he'd get to the end of the row, and he'd come there and play a game of checkers with Uncle George and get talking. And he was funny. He was an uneducated mountaineer,
uh-huh.
But he had good sense. He had good sense, and he could tell a story well in his style, very much like the style of Nigger's story. But I don't remember any Jake stories, but I know Uncle George was highly entertained, and
uh-huh.
He didn't care how long he didn't plow.
Yeah,
just stand there and talk, sit there and talk to him. And I had as much fun with Uncle George one time up there. This place had a nice cement porch, and it was kind of low, but it wasn't very high off the ground.
Cement porch?
Cement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was a rock house, and cement porch front and back.
Mm-hmm.
Made it very durable. And so he was sitting there in a rocking chair, and the porch had rock pillars up so far, and then a column, you know, the porch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that really didn't have balances, but he could probably see against those one of those posts, you know. So that was his favorite position. And a rocking chair with his feet propped up on that post. And he fell off the porch and kind of cracked a rib. And he took it off hard. He wrote me off. There I have a man sitting on the front porch in a rocking chair and fall off of it. How does one do that? I can't do a lot of it. Sitting on a rocket down the porch and fall off of it.
That is something. So up there, after Uncle Billy died, you'd just get into Surrey and go to Springs and spend the day.
Yes, she loved to pack a lunch. Mine had fried chicken and biscuits and pies and cakes and deviled eggs, you know. Because they had all their own eggs. And sometimes it's chicken, sometimes it's ham, sometimes it's both, because they had the best ham.
Uh-huh.
This side of them. You know where?
I know they have was that a melon?
This big melon.
Yeah.
Oh, and we got nothing to do, you know, Page Street. And that's all I live to see today.
Yeah.
I'll be living on Page Street in McIntosh.
And now you...
Somebody said, you're going to be sorry that we're down with watermelon trucks getting me up and down there. And other vegetable trucks, too. But they're about... confined in that of Watermelon. So just once a year that we have these.
What do you remember, Lois, about visiting over with Uncle Mon in Spartanburg? You'd have to think about it. I mean, you hadn't thought much about it.
Well, I was quite a charming visitor over there.
Yeah.
But I remember in my mind, I can see that they had a nice one-story home. It was nice furniture. He married, I said, Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Rogers had Mon had three children, three girls, and Uncle John married the middle one. And and Mr. Rogers left her quite a dowry, and I think that's the reason why Uncle John didn't worry so much, didn't have so much to say about how much that 110 days in the hospital, I think they may pay for it himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was paid for out of, because he had never spent it for money,
mm-hmm.
you see, in his operation. But she got a good deal of money from her father.
Mm-hmm.
And so because Uncle John took it so easy, a lot of people say how much it's costing. And the doctor said to him, you better move up. So it was how much it was going to cost. And he said, well, don't you worry about that. I'll worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a home, first thing I'd do would be to bring him to the hospital over here so we just stay.
Well, now, when you were over there as a child, did you just stay around the house? Or did you go down to the grocery?
Well, sometimes I'd go down there, but for most part, Mother was always with me. We just stayed at the house with them.
Mm-hmm.
That made sense. They had a horse and buggy, and they didn't drive. And they didn't drive the horse and buggy. And I think Uncle John went to work. I think he lived far enough out, so that he didn't walk to the store. Think he drove. So we were just there
mm-hmm.
at the house. Cooking, eating, and resting, visiting the village.
Yeah.
Some young people, some young folks my age. And there was a Tremier family lived there, a kind of distant relative of Uncle Billy. And they had a girl named Lita, L-E-I-T-A, Lita. And she had me come over and spend the night with her. I remember that. And I remember something else about her room. It was days when these Gibson girl pictures were quite popular.
Oh.
And it was a thing to do, girls that age in their room, they'd burn, these pictures came out in magazines, and you take a match and burn around there, just various ways. And then you put them on your wall. So she had these Gibson girl pictures all around in the ceiling of her, the edge,
uh-huh.
the drop ceiling there. First time I'd ever seen anything like that.
Yes.
she was older than I. She was a little older than I. But you know, there wasn't much difference in this age business back and then. But now everybody's got to be the same age level.
Mm-hmm.
But she was 7 years older than I, but she had me over there, and we had a good time together. And I have thought supreme that my mother's friends, to this day, my mother's friends and I are friends.
Oh, yeah.
But it isn't much that way with this generation.
Well, that's just something new, isn't it?
They run around with their own kind of disease. Well, they all go to school, and they're all in the same grade, the same age, and that's who they know
mm-hmm.
the most there.
That's right. I guess the schools are bigger, and they're separated
mm-hmm.
just about it. I agree. When I went to school, we associated with everybody.
Well, yes,
small classes.
Mm-hmm. His mother was running the hotel at that time, the McIntosh Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the piano in the long dining room. Dining room and sitting room combined.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the dining room, it was a little private because they weren't eating all day long. That's where Tommy did his practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And he would practice. He would practice. And Miss Burry told me, she said later, she said, well, Tommy didn't learn to play much music. But said, we still have no regrets. We're glad to say it kept him off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would practice out there. They're having trouble getting in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And if he hadn't been practicing, he'd been out on the main street running around with the boys. And so that was the way she felt about it. And to come up here for his lesson now, during the time he was taking lessons, my sister was here. And she was in the bedroom upstairs. She's in the company room upstairs. And my pupils were having lessons down here. And I remember Tommy was here for a lesson. And he was trying to learn to play that hymn, In the Garden. And it took him a long time to play it. I wrote Lucille. We said, Tommy's still in the garden. Tommy's still in the garden. Nobody will ever get out of the house. So Tommy played an recital for me. I don't think he played in the garden. I think he played something else. And at the same time, he was taking voice lessons. No, not voice lessons, but expression or speech lessons from someone who was staying at the hotel, a woman. She was trying to get up a class of speech or expression, whatever they call it. And Tommy took, and he was pretty good at that.
Oh, really?
And so I often have a variety of number of some kind, a song or a reading or a dance, if someone's going to a dancing studio at that time. A little variety from a variety of number on the program. So I found an awfully cute reading in a book that I had, a Negro sermon. Negro speaking sermon on hoe, everyone that thirsts. And it was the funniest thing, just keep on hoeing. You see, the scripture says, just keep on hoeing. Hoe everyone, just don't stop and get a drink of water. Just keep on hoeing. The Bible said, hoe. All you that But Tommy made a good thing out of it. And we had him repeat that. And he gave that on my program. He memorized it and gave it on my program. And after that, he was asking various programs. And they wanted something humorous to get Tommy to read that poem again about ho, everyone that thirsts. Just keep on hoeing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it, Tommy. Later, went to university. He graduated from College of Pharmacy.
Oh, did he?
And worked as a druggist in various drugstores. And finally, he bought one. It was in Lakeland.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought a nice home. In the meantime, he had 5 children, 4 girls and a boy. And they all come back here to visit on various occasions. And Tommy began to tell me when I was seeing about Miss Lewis, I can't play the music, but I still enjoy my music lessons. I can appreciate music when I hear it, and I can read it by sight a little bit, which I couldn't do at all if I hadn't had music lessons. So he said, I know it's a disappointment to you and to Mama and to myself too that I can't really play. But I said, I have no regret at all about the time I spent studying. I think it did something for me. And I had bought a piano. I said, if every one of my 5 children take music lessons.
Yes. That's right. Well, now,
he told me that not once, but several times when I was seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me quite an uplift that I was doing, bringing some brightness, some melody, some culture into life.
The idea of budgets.
Well, he had been in Baptist churches. All of them had. I guess every Baptist church in the country, most has a budget, but we had never had one. As I say, we always had money. I always got to where I'm going, as L.K. says, that I never travel by map. I just get in the car, and I get where I'm going. And so we begin a year without any plans or financial plans, but we always come out ahead.
Yeah.
So he wasn't very keen on budget.
And you never had to worry about budget.
No, I don't know anything about budgets either. I can never get it to balance. That'd be just one other thing to worry about.
And the reason it amused me, so I never struggle with a budget. It's awful.
But no, sometimes I thought, well, I guess maybe I should keep account of my expenses. And my goodness, that's bookkeeping you never saw.
Mm-hmm.
You can't balance it to save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, what's the matter? I spent that and it's gone. I have this and this and that so far.
You tell what's left.
Spend half the night and wake up next morning and feel the headache,
yeah,
trying to balance the thing.
Yeah.
You played her husband's funeral music.
Yeah.
At the age of about 94.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh.
But
material, the up above, she had these of the teaching material. I'll print it and she gave it to us.
Mm-hmm.
But we wrote then above, day after day, these little things that you say that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now those little things that she said that you liked, and really the first person I've ever seen really who's
and she lay in there for 4 months on the bed and couldn't read anything but the newspaper, and then just the sporting section that she read mostly.
Yeah.
But she was great with the clips from the paper. She really kept scissors there, and then she pinned them to the curtain, the draperies that were there. until she just had it all, the David all stuck up. So I went down one day, and I thought I'd just borrow a scrapbook. And we get a paper, but that didn't interest you around, put them on the curtain. And then we take off the curtain, then she'd fill them up again.
Oh.
So, you know, I thought, February 1st, 1933.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice handwriting. Is that yours?
That's mine. Mm-hmm. Do the history of men.
Mm-hmm.
Men are what women marry. They have two hands, two feet, and sometimes two wives. But never more than one collar button at a time. Like Turkish cigarettes, men are all made of the same material. The only difference is that some are more distinguished than others. Generally speaking, they may be divided into three classes: husbands, bachelors, and widowers. An eligible bachelor is a mass of obstinacy entirely surrounded by suspicion. Husbands are of three kinds: prizes, surprises, and consolation prizes. To make a husband out of a man is the highest plastic art known to civilization. It requires sculpture, faith, hope, and charity, especially charity. I don't believe you like this.
Yeah, that's cute.
It is a psychological marvel that a soft, fluffy, violin-scented thing like a girl can enjoy kissing a big, awkward, tobacco-scented thing like a man.
Yes.
Now, I didn't write this. I copied it.
Yes.
It isn't original. If you flatter a man, it scares him to death. If you don't, it bores him to death. If you permit him to make love to you, he leaves you in the end. If you don't, he leaves you in the beginning. You believe all he says, and he thinks you are foolish. And if you don't, he knows you're a cynic. If you wear gay colors, rouge, and a starling hat, he hesitates to take you out. But if you wear a little brown tote and tailor-made suit, he takes you out and spends the entire evening gazing at a woman in a starling hat, rouge, and gay colors. If you are silly, he longs for a brilliant mate. And if you are brilliant, he longs for a playmate. It's the, I don't know where I got it, but it's all true, and somehow I can't, you know. If you are popular with other men, he's jealous. And if you're not, he hesitates to marry a wallflower. So what are we going to do about it, girls?
Mm-hmm.
Let's join the IWW, Independent Wild Women,
mm-hmm.
and let the men take it or leave it. The first 100 years were the hardest. But between you and me, girls, I hope you take it. I thought that was cute. I've got a lot of things.
I bet you don't have one of those etudes with something in it that...
I tell you how I happen to have them.
This is the end of Channel 1 Over. This is the end of Channel 1 Over. And I'll continue it on Channel 1 Right after Flora's... tape. This is the end of Channel 1 Over, and towards the end of Lois Dixon's visit on Sunday afternoon, the 22nd of June, '69.